Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. Our guest today is Zan Merrill, co-editor of the book, Where Are Your Men? Rafting Western Rivers with the Ladies. It's a compilation of stories from women who have been running rivers for decades and find themselves back out on whitewater year after year. Where Are Your Men? Is filled with tales of difficult rescues and the kind of unexpected adventures Western river runners love to share. Through a variety of stories, haikus, poems, and essays, these personal accounts explore the beauty of both the rivers and trusted friendships forged over the years. Sharing life celebrations and tragedies, these women navigate the waters of their lives. We'll talk with Zan Merrill following the news. Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. Our guest today is Zan Merrill, co-editor of the book, Where Are Your Men? Rafting Western Rivers with the Ladies, a compilation of stories from women who've been running rivers for decades and find themselves back out on whitewater year after year. Where Are Your Men? Is filled with tales of difficult rescues and the kind of unexpected adventures Western river runners love to share. Through a variety of stories, haikus, poems, and essays, these personal accounts explore the beauty of both the rivers and trusted friendships forged over the years. Sharing life celebrations and tragedies, these women navigate the waters of their lives. We bring in now the co-editor of the book, Zan Merrill. Zan Merrill, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Tom. It's good to be here this morning.
I understand you talked to us from Wyoming. Appreciate you joining us through the magic of Zoom here. So I want to get a little bit of your background. What drew you to the rivers first? Do you remember your first trip?
Oh, yes. It was a very memorable trip. I was on a waiting list to go down the Grand Canyon in the spring of 1981. And 3 days before the trip, I was informed that a spot had opened up and I could go on the river trip. Of course, anybody's first trip down the Grand Canyon is life-changing. It's a beautiful place. It's a 2 to 3 week trip. Our trip was a 3 week trip. And once I did that trip, I was hooked. Although I did have quite a long wait before my next river trip, which was also a Grand Canyon trip, but that didn't happen until 1998, so almost 20 years later. Life, a couple of master's degrees, you know, other things got in the way of river running. But after that trip in 98, I realized if I wanted to do rafting, it was now or never. I was in my late 40s. I got together with a couple of girlfriends there in Cache Valley. We bought a boat and started rafting, and that was that. I've been on the river pretty consistently ever since then.
So was that a big deal? Did people kind of look askance at that? You and your girlfriends get a raft and head out to the river?
Oh, no. We didn't. Well, we did several ladies trips, but we do mixed trips all the time.
Okay.
So, no, everybody in the river community is very supportive of one another, and that it wasn't an issue. So
the Grand Canyon trip and then the 98 trip and then, you know, subsequently, what is it about a trip down the river? What tell us what the fascination is for those of us who don't. I've been a couple of times, just short trips. Tell me what's the big deal? What do you get out of it?
Well, every river is different. Each one has its own particular kind of beauty. I like to call it being on river time when you're floating down a river. You're going 2 to 3 miles an hour as you float through beautiful canyon country, or if you're up in the on the Idaho rivers, you're floating through national forests. And you have time to contemplate. You have time to look at the reflection of light from the river onto the canyon walls. You have time to appreciate the smells and the sounds and just be part of nature. It's very calming. It's very peaceful 98% of the time. The other 2% of the time, you're thinking about rapids and oh, some of the challenges, including weather challenges that you can face on the river. But it's an all-engrossing experience. You know, once you're on the river, you're on the river. You can't go to a convenience store to pick up anything you may have left behind. You make do with what you have, and usually we have more than enough of everything. I don't know. It's a great experience, and you're usually on the river. Well, you're almost always on the river with a great group of people.
Tell me about that. Once you're on the river, you're on the river, and yet, there's only a certain place you get out, I guess. So that must make for some great communal experiences, group experiences.
The group experiences are wonderful. You start the day with a great big pot of coffee or a cup of tea, and there's usually one person who gets up early and has things going for the rest of the group. And it's very nice to sit around in the mornings and chat about the upcoming day, talk about the rapids you're going to scout, talk about potential camps, and then you all get together and pack your gear, which is also a group effort. Once you're on the river, it's a little bit more of an individual experience because each person is on their own boat, or two or three people are on one boat. But then when you get to camp again, you go back to the group effort. You unload the boats, you set up the kitchen, you get your camp set up. We usually have a communal dinner, and they're fabulous. We have some great cooks on many of these trips. And then you get to spend the evening sharing river stories, talking about, well, whatever you want to talk about.
Tell me about how the women's trips started. How did that start?
Actually, the women's river trips were started in the 90s by a woman named Michi White, and she started the I can't remember exactly the name of the organization in Park City, but it's an outdoor adventure organization. I think it's called the Nat National Ability Center, and she would coordinate trips for people with disabilities. All kinds of trips, including river trips. So it's very a similar organization to the Common Ground organization that's in Logan, Utah. Michi had all this equipment, and she thought it would be a good idea to empower women by offering women's trips. So they got a couple of trips going, and it just expanded from there. The gals had such a good experience that we started doing our own river trips, and they've just grown from there. I was introduced, oh, I don't know, probably 15 years ago to the ladies' trips, and it's been, well, my pleasure to be able to do at least one trip a year with a group of ladies.
So a couple of the writers in this compilation say that men change the trips, and you all go on mixed trips and ladies trips. How is the all women different?
Well, this gets a little personal, but when you're in with a mixed group, you have to be a little conscious of, usually on a river trip, when you need to go to the bathroom, you pee directly into the river. Dilution is the solution, is what they say. And so you have to look for a little bit more private spot to go to the bathroom. On a ladies' trip, that's not an issue. We also like to sunbathe, and when there are not men on the trip, we don't have to worry about sunbathing. So it just makes it a little freer, I would say.
Probably it was well there's I read briefly one story you ladies were sunbathing and a couple of men happened upon your
Right.
camp. Embarrassment all around, I guess.
Well, all the ladies, I wasn't on that trip, but everybody was in their 50s at that point, and these young men were in their 20s. And yeah, I think they were the two groups, the men and the women, had leapfrogged each other as they were going down the river. And the ladies thought we had plenty of space between the two trips to be able to enjoy some naked sunbathing, but apparently that wasn't the case. And one of the kids was so embarrassed, he stood up on the boat and hollered, "I didn't see anything," and then he fell in the water. So.
That's good. That's good stuff. It might be uncomfortable for some people, but this practicalities fascinate me. So you have a section, an appendix on etiquette,
Yes.
which include rules for peeing in the river. So apparently. Let's see. Women go upstream, men downstream. Is that the rule?
Well, it depends on the river,
Okay.
but yeah, that's a good general practice. There are some camps where you don't have a choice. Everybody goes in the same spot.
And then it was interesting to read that the southwestern rivers have different rules from the rest of rivers, I guess, in the U.S.
The biggest difference is how you dispose of wastewater, like your kitchen dishwater. On southwestern rivers, you strain it directly into the river. But on the northern rivers, the Idaho rivers, you strain it above the high water line.
Interesting. And I guess probably different river etiquette rules and if you go abroad, right? Very likely.
Typically a little lo looser rules when you're abroad.
I was interested to, again, this little section. You have a little section on foot care. That one thing that, and I probably would forget this, you say, sunburn on your foot is really, really bad. So don't forget your foot to put
Yes.
sunscreen on there.
Right. Well, it's so tempting, especially on these southwest rivers with beautiful sand beaches, to go barefoot all the time. If the weather's nice and warm, who wants to put shoes on after wearing sandals all day? And we do tend to have quite a few foot injuries. In fact, I think there's a picture in the book of Beth Bouton, who lives there in Cache Valley, doctoring my foot on one of our ladies' river trips.
Yeah, gotta make sure. So back to the women's trips. I guess you guys are serious about this. I got a kick out of this. There was discussion that one of the ladies was pregnant with a boy, and there was discussion, I don't know how serious of does she come or not, because she's pregnant with a boy.
Well, yeah, I think that was more of a joke than anything. But yeah, she was ultimately allowed to go on the river trip. So.
Okay, yeah. And then it's hilarious what your husbands ask you about this, because they're not allowed right on these trips. They'll ask you, what do you talk about? And this is my favorite, do you have a guest speaker? People will ask you.
Well, we just talked. Oh, you cut out. Could you repeat
Oh, yes.
that, please?
Yeah, they ask you, what do you talk about out there, right? Are you talking about us, that kind of thing? Do you have a guest speaker?
Well, we talk about the same things that everybody talks about on river trips. A lot of times our conversations are about our gear and the way we have our rigs set up and what we might do to make things a little more efficient. Yeah, we talk about our river adventures. We talk about what happened during the day, especially if there's been a little excitement. We'll talk about that for hours, near flips or getting stuck on a rock or, whatever may have happened.
There's a core group, I understand it, that you might expand on certain trips, but there's a core group. Maybe tell me about some of the ladies in that core group.
Well, Martha Hutt now lives in Montrose, Colorado. She's pushing 80. She's in her late 70s. And she started as a river guide in the 1980s. So Martha's been running trips for a long time. She has a lot of experience, and she's also a lot of fun to have on river trips. So she often goes. Another gal who grew up in Cache Valley, Nancy Hess, her maiden name was Nancy Klepfer. She's also been running rivers since the early 80s, and she got involved when her brother had one of the guiding companies down on the Grand Canyon. So she's been rafting a long time too. And then there's, Mel and Ginny and Doreen and Elise and, whoever can make it. We start with 5 or 6 people on each group, and of course, not everybody can make it on every trip, so we go from there.
Now, some of the ladies, I guess, grew up in the West. Others are transplanted. At least one that was kind of a typical story. Loved the West, loved the rivers, loved the snow so much. She moved out. And you hear about that.
Yes.
You hear about that every once in a while. People just can't stay away. Have to move out here.
Well, most of the girls that who have transplanted fell in love with the West on their first trip out here. And the woman that you're speaking about is Martha again. And she is from Tennessee. She had a great job with Kodak. Her background is in mathematics. She came out on a vacation one summer to do the Grand Canyon and went back. Quit her job and moved out west. She moved to the Winter Park area where she could guide rivers in the summertime and ski in the wintertime.
So you just to completely change your life, your lifestyle. So tell me about the title. Where are your men? Where'd that come from?
Where are your men? Well, it turns out that we get asked that question on almost every women's trip that we've ever been on. And the name of the book, we decided on the name of the book. It was 2021, and there was a group of us camped in a gorgeous ledge camp in the goosenecks of the San Juan down in southern Utah. It was evening. We'd had dinner and we were sitting around sipping our wine, and a single boater was floating by. And you could tell he was really checking us out. He was searching around the camp. He was looking at all of us. And as he floated by, he said, "Where are your men?" And of course, we just cracked up. We thought it was pretty funny. And replied, "We left them at home. They're at home." And that led to a discussion. We realized we were asked that question quite often. And I realized that maybe we were a unique group. Maybe we did have some stories that we could tell. So a discussion ensued. And as I thought about it during the rest of the trip, I asked the women if they would be willing to write stories for an anthology, for a compilation. And many of them were hesitant at first, but we decided to give it a shot and tell some of our stories. And the result is this book, and it titled itself, Where Are Your Men?
Where are your men? Right. And this is available, I guess, you can get it on Amazon, etc.
You can get it on Amazon. We did publish through Ingram, so any bookstore can order a copy for you. It's available in all three formats. You can get print. I used AI to generate the audio version, and of course, there's also an electronic version.
All right. And I've gone to the website whereareyourmen.com. It's a website you can go to
Yes.
and
Yep. And you can.
click on various vendors to buy the book from there, I guess.
Yes. Right.
Let's take a brief break. We'll come back with much more with Zan Merrill, co-editor of the book, Where Are Your Men? Rafting Western Rivers with the Ladies. We'll have more following this brief break.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We're talking with Zan Merrill. She's co-editor of the book, Where Are Your Men? Rafting Western Rivers with the Ladies. It's a compilation of stories from women who've been running rivers for decades and find themselves back out on whitewater year after year. Do you ladies, did you have a trip, or do you have a trip this summer?
Yes, we do have a San Juan trip planned at the end of September. Relatively small group. I think there are only five or six gals going on that trip. But it's a perfect time of year to be on the river.
Yeah.
Nice weather.
Yeah, September. Yeah, that would be good.
Water,
yeah.
Level. Mm-hmm.
So several of the ladies talked about San Juan in this compilation. What are some other rivers? You've run a lot of rivers.
Yes, we have done the Main Fork of the Salmon for one of our ladies' trips. We've done Desolation and Gray Canyons, which are the Green River, on several of our trips. We've done Ruby Horse Thief, which is a stretch of the Colorado just outside Grand Junction, for a few trips. We end up on the San Juan quite often. We've been able to get permits on that river and cancellations on that river. And it's convenient and it's not really a difficult float. So that makes it nice too. We can just sit and relax, not have to worry about anything, but well, one rapid, government rapid, can get a little interesting, especially at lower water levels. So yeah, the San Juan figures prominently in many of our stories because we've done so many ladies' trips on that river.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about the rapids, maybe starting with one of the chapters you have in the book. It's called Flip! Exclamation point, where you say everybody's going to flip. Tell me, that's kind of scary. Tell me about that.
Flips can be scary, but we've all taken river safety courses, and you just are prepared and expect it to happen every once in a while, and it does. So this particular flip did happen on the San Juan. It wasn't in a rapid, however. It was on a section of the river. Oh, well, there's really not a whole lot going on. But on that particular river trip, the San Juan rose overnight from 1,200 CFS, cubic feet per second, up to 9,000 CFS. So it was running, really high and really fast. And what that does is it gets rid of the eddies on the edge of the river where you can pull out. And in that case, a lot of the brush on the side of the river, the tamarisk and particularly the Russian olive, it was right in the river. Kelly was following Karen a little too closely as Karen scouted a potential, well, we were going to stop for a hike to go up Chinle that day. And we just couldn't, the water was just too fast. So Karen pulled over to look at the situation, and then she pulled out into the river, and Kelly was a little too close behind her and couldn't make the pull. She got caught in some Russian olives, and her boat flipped. So the gal, I was way behind. There were 13 boats on that particular trip. I was way behind. I was kind of keeping an eye on everybody. But the girls took care of the situation. Janet got Kelly out of the water. Karen got hold of her boat. And Doreen started pulling some of the loose gear out of the water that had floated away. But that's all they did. And we were coming into a very narrow part of the canyon where there would be no eddies for several miles, and it would be difficult to maintain ourselves in that configuration. So I decided it was up to me to flip the boat over and turn my boat around so I could row, pull downstream, which is a little stronger rowing motion. I got to the boat and, well, shall I read the excerpt?
Yeah, that'd be great. Yes, certainly.
Okay, let's see if I can find it. Just one second. Okay. I swing backwards into the current so I can pull hard and catch those girls. I practically leave awake as I stroke by everybody but Karen. As I approach Janet and Kelly, I holler, "Can you catch my bow line?" Janet acknowledges yes. I can see that Kelly's tubes are skiwampus, with one level at river line and the other at an awkward angle. My best chance to flip her boat upright is to jump onto the tube that's in the water, grab a strap on the other tube, and use my momentum to swing it upright as my boat floats by. Damn, if this works, someone should be taking a video of this 61-year-old woman attempting such an athletic rescue. But there's only a second to fantasize heroics. Timing is critical. I toss my bow line to Janet, and she catches it. I position myself to jump. I clear my boat that Janet is skillfully rowing out of the way. As I land squarely on the tube of Kelly's cataract, I swing forward and grab a strap that's sticking up above the other tube. Leaning back with my full weight, I pull hard on the boat. It follows me over as I slide off and plunge into the water. The boat's upright. I grab the frame and haul myself onto the seat. Kelly's cat is a paddle craft, and I'm a rower. I hate paddling. But here goes. I tell Kelly to jump on my boat and start rowing to relieve Janet. She's shaken up, but makes it. I holler at Karen to look for an eddy so we can pull in and regroup. Then I shout at Doreen and tell her to pass it on down the line. We're going to pull into the first eddy we see. So that was a little exciting.
Yeah. There was an interesting passage in one of the chapters. One of your group hadn't, I guess, hadn't been out for about 5 years. And you say, you know, rapids can be scary. You just have to scout them out and know the best, and generally you're okay. But she hadn't been out there in 5 years. So she had to kind of get her emotions under control to do it.
Yes, that was Elise, and that was Government Rapid on the San Juan, and the river was low. That rapid gets a little more difficult at lower water levels. It took Elise, quite a bit of work to get her courage up, but as she watched the rest of us go through, she realized that she could do it, and she had a great run. She got rapid and was very relieved, and we were all really happy for her. So you got to get back on the
You got to
horse.
get back on the horse. Tell me about that. Tell me about the process of scouting a rapid, and then because it, I mean, it, you might know the rapid, but it changes depending on the water level and et cetera. Tell me about that process, scouting, then running it.
Usually at the beginning of the day, you agree on which rapids you want to scout. And we've all done these rivers so many times, we know which ones we want to look at. So as you approach the rapid, there's always a place you can pull over. Well, depending on which side of the river, either the right side or the left side, you tie up your boats, and sometimes it's a pretty long walk. Sometimes it can be a quarter mile or more to get down to the rapid to scout it. You get up on a high point and you read the water. You s pick out a line, as we call it, and pick out some markers, some rocks that may be sticking out. The way a bubble line, follows the current through the water, and you make your plan. As you're standing there scouting the rapid with the other people, you usually compare notes. You say, "Which line are you going to take? What about that boulder over there? Which side are you going to go on? The right side or the left side? Are you going to go down the middle of the tongue or the right-hand side of the tongue to avoid that rock down there?" So you make a plan and hike back to your boats. You usually have a particular order of boats. You send one of your stronger rafters down first. They pull off into an eddy below the rapid so they can help anybody if they get into trouble. And then the rest of the group goes down. Many times you're not able to follow your plan. You have to go with plan B, plan C, plan whatever, depending on how the river treats you as you're going through the rapid. And then the last person to go down is called sweep, and they're also usually a pretty strong boater. They can pick up the pieces, so to speak, if there are any issues that have to be dealt with.
Well, you've answered my question. I was going to ask you. You can scout it, but once you're on the river, surprises, I guess, come up.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. Well, and as you mentioned earlier, these rapids can change quite a bit from year to year. I just got off the Middle Fork in northern Idaho, and the first several miles of that river have completely changed over the, I guess it was last year, where they had a lot of flash flooding with the fires and debris washing into the river and completely changing the rapids. Velvet Falls is a completely different rapid, and so is Hell's Half Mile above Velvet Falls. So it's a good idea to look at these.
I'm remembering so when I was a teenager, our church a youth group we made fiberglass kayaks, and we floated the green from the dam down to a certain point. My kayak immediately found a rock and got a hole, so I remember my adult advisor came and helped me out, but the rest of the boys had fun. But one of the indelible memories I have is we only floated down to a place where there's a literal skull and crossbones on the cliffside, saying
Oh, my.
don't go beyond rapids. Certain rapids are beyond here, and so we I fully supported our plan to not go on those rapids. But I guess that brings up a question. Are there some rapids that are just too scary? Are there some rapids that really get your adrenaline pumping?
Oh, there are several that do. Hell's Half Mile on Gates of Lodore is always a heart stopper. It looks impossible to run, but you can get through it. Of course, on the Grand Canyon, there are numerous rapids that are very scary. Lava, of course, is the biggest, scariest rapid, but there's Crystal, Upset, Hance. There are, many, many rapids on the Grand Canyon that you got to run those rapids. Nobody's going to come get you off the river, so.
So what do you I guess the adrenaline is I guess for someone like that is it enjoyable, but scary too. How do you prepare for that? How do you navigate a really scary rapid like that?
Well, you just give it your best shot. Like I explained, when you're doing the scout, you pick the best line possible, the line you think you can do, the line you think you can get your boat through, and just do what you can do. If something goes wrong, hopefully you've prepared for the worst. You've got all your gear tied in. You have your life jacket on. In some cases, we wear helmets. You have your helmet on. And if you do end up in the river, well, that's part of our river safety training. You float with your feet facing downstream so you can kick yourself off rocks. You do what you can to self-rescue. But everybody else on the trip will do what they can to rescue you also. If you can get into an eddy, that's a very good possibility. A lot of times, somebody in another boat will pick you up. And if they can't do that, then if they have to, they'll throw you a flip line. But it's never a good idea to get a lot of flip lines in the water because of entanglement issues. So I think we may have a lot. Are you still there? I'm having
Yes.
internet. Okay.
Yes. Thankfully, your audio is still going.
Okay.
Let's take a brief break. Come back with more. With Zan Merrill, the interesting book, Where Are Your Men? Rafting Western Rivers with the Ladies is the compilation of stories. It's out and available now. You can get it on Amazon and other places. You can go to whereareyourmen.com to see details as well. More following this break. Thanks for listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We're talking with Zan Merrill. She's co-editor of a new book. It's a compilation called Where Are Your Men? Rafting Western Rivers with the Ladies. So Zan Merrill, I was fascinated by several of the women talking about adjustments that that need to be made when it's all women, right? So, for example, you don't pack huge, heavy chests. You maybe distribute things around so you can carry things. Also, I was interested, if it's a mixed group, usually, apparently, the leader hands out formal assignments. If it's the women's group, maybe that's just a portion everybody just pitches in.
Oh, I'd say everybody pitches in on every river trip. After you've done a few river trips with a group of people that you're familiar with the gear that they have and the things that they can carry on a boat. So, for example, right now I'm planning a desolation trip, and I know that somebody has the kitchen, somebody else has the groover. I know that we'll all be carrying water. Somebody else has a stove and the propane to power the stove. And yeah, you just share gear, share assignments. Of course, everybody has their own personal gear that they bring. It is nice when there are some larger boats on the trip. Most of us women have smaller boats, and those are some of the adaptations. That's probably the biggest adaptation we've had to make. Is go with boats that are suitable for our body size. So none of us row 18-foot rafts. We all have small self-bailing rafts, 13 feet long, 14 feet long, or we have catarafts that are 12 to 13 feet long. They're easier to maneuver. We can't pack as much gear, so we have to downsize our kitchen, downsize some of our gear. But we can carry everything we need. Mm-hmm. So it works.
Yeah.
Carry small tables, things like that.
One of the ladies, I really enjoyed this piece. She kind of the tagline was "Women use finesse," and so she was. She was first trip down this river, I think maybe in Oregon somewhere, was as a bailer. And they asked her afterwards, what'd the rapid look like? And she said, "Oh, I don't know. I didn't know. I had my eyes on the bottom of the boat, desperately trying to bail." I guess they have self-bailing boats now, but, she said then her friend invited her to train to be a guide. And so there was this one rapid where you had to go down solo to prove you could do it. And the man, the man was using all of his might to get away from the boulder. And her friend said, "Women use finesse." And so that's what she did.
Exactly. Exactly. That was Faye Cottingham. She lives in California, but she's come out to do a few ladies trips with us. And she's tiny. She's about 5'1", doesn't weigh a whole lot. And she was rowing a great big gear boat on the Rogue River, is the story that you were talking about. And I've got that excerpt tagged also.
All right.
If you'd like to hear it.
I'd love to.
Okay, one of my first commercial trips was on the wild and scenic Rogue River in Oregon. Thrilled but nervous, on day 3 of the trip, I was about to row the biggest rapid on the river, Blossom Bar. "This next rapid is different," I was told by the other guides. "There is a must-make move at the top. It's not difficult, but you have to move from the fast-moving current, which is headed straight into a row of boulders, into the slower-moving water of the eddy. If you mess up, we could spend all day here trying to get your boat off the rocks. We stood and watched Raph go through the rapid, and I couldn't help but notice how strong and tan the rower looked, like he belonged in that rowing seat. As the raft hit the fast-moving current, he began to row hard and then even harder, barely escaping the doomsday line of boulders. He made it into the eddy, but he didn't make it look easy. Oh, let's see. Now she's at the scout. She's leaving the scout. She says, I tried to wake up from the daze I was in. I would be alone. That was the rule. No guests on a guide's first time down a new river. Someone untied my boat for me and asked if I was ready to be pushed off. I must have said yes. There was hooting and cheering above on the scouting rock, and I knew a boat had made it safely through. As I floated, oh so gently in the current, barely moving towards the green tongue that would rapidly accelerate my raft, I took a slow, deep breath, and something strange happened. Time stood still. I felt the smooth ash oars in my hands and my feet resting solidly on the cheater bars. The boulders before me looked soft, sculpted by a millennium of water passing over them. A shimmering pillow of water mounded up and rolled off the first big boulder. The water looked like liquid metal as the sun and sky reflected off the river in ribbons of light, bending, undulating, dividing the river channel. I could feel the air moving across my arms and the warmth of the sun at the same time. An osprey screeched above me, and then I heard Karen's voice in my head as if she was sitting right beside me. Women use finesse. I sat up with just the right amount of angle. My stern barely missed the sneaker rope at the top of the rapid that would surely bump me straight into the faster water if I were to hit it with any momentum. Then my raft picked up speed. I felt my lower abdomen tighten with one, two, three, four pulls on my oars. My stern hit the eddy and my bow swung around. I was where I needed to be and safely lined up for the next drop. You finessed it, I heard Karen say to me. Thank you, girlfriend, I said out loud.
Yeah, women use finesse. That's great. Yeah.
Yep. She's a great rower.
So early in the book, you kind of a historical note. You one of the people, or maybe you, mentions in passing that one of the stereotypes early on was women can't paddle. But I think that's been dispelled, right? Are there stereotypes that persist?
Occasionally we still run into that stereotype. I was talking with a group of people in Grand Junction. They had gathered outside one of the independent bookshops there, and they were talking to the owner. And there was a mixed group. There were a couple of older guys in the group, and then there was a younger couple. And Margie started telling them about my book. And one of the older men turned and looked at me and he goes, "Well, who rows you through the big rapid?" And of course, all you can do is laugh and just say, we're there by ourselves, so we just have to manage and get through by our, on our own.
I want to read this just a short passage. This is a chapter called Our Lady's Trips. Jeanette Deagle, am I saying her name right?
Yes. Yep.
So she talks about the relationships. I just want to read this. It's quite moving. She says, "These river women are my heroes. When I was caring for my elderly mother, they provided a temporary escape to clear my mind. When I lost my mom, these ladies let me cry and hugged me. When I felt adrift, they gave me a sense of direction. When I felt worthless, these ladies made me feel valued. When I needed to hear about women who adventured together, they shared experiences of foreign travel. When any one of us had joys, we rejoiced. When any one of us had sorrows, we shared the grief and provided a soft place to land. What makes these trips so special? It's hard to explain," she says. "But I'm honored to be invited every time, and I've cried bigger tears and embraced life in deeper ways when I'm with these women." So I imagine a big part of this is those shared experiences and those relationships.
It really does strengthen our friendships, and it makes us appreciate each other and appreciate what we've all gone through. These adventures tie us together. These day-to-day experiences that we have on the river are wonderful, but when you get down to the core of things, it is the love and support that we give each other that really is the most important thing. I learned of my partner's death while I was on a river trip, and the support and love that I got from the women on that trip was, well, I don't know how I could have gotten through without that. Being in nature, of course, is a huge part of why we love these river trips, but the friendships and the camaraderie are at the core of everything, I would say.
Yeah, that is important. Some of the members of the group are now in their 70s, right? You mentioned late 70s in at least one case. I guess you ladies will keep doing these as long as you can.
As long as we can, that's right. I just got off, as I mentioned, the Middle Fork of the Salmon a couple of weeks ago, and it was a great mix of ages. We had about half the group, we had, oh, 13 or 14 people. About half the group were in their 20s and 30s, and the other half of the group was in their 60s and 70s. And we had a blast together. We really enjoyed each other's company. It was a very good mix, a very positive mix.
You mentioned the book. Somebody mentioned in the book the encounter. You ladies are on your trip, and you see a group of all women in their, I think, 30s, kind of a thing. Must have been kind of a nice thing. See another ladies group out there.
Yeah, it is. We are starting to see more ladies trips. I was down hawking my book a few weeks ago at the Ruby Horse Thief Put-In in Colorado, and there were a couple of young women on an old bucket boat who were putting on, and just the two of them by themselves. We run into groups now on the San Juan with ladies groups, and I've talked to quite a few women since publishing this book, and they have mentioned how interested they are now to get involved in strictly ladies trips. So I hope it fosters a few more of those trips.
Well, it's been quite the adventure to get this book published. Now it's published and out. What do you most hope people take from this book?
Oh boy, that's a good question. Well, I hope they enjoy the adventures. I hope they enjoy some of the insights into, well, doing a ladies' trip together, but the insights that you get, being out and on your own in the wilderness, basically. I don't know. I guess I just hope that they enjoy the book.
Yeah, wonderful. Well, in the meantime, at least some of you ladies will be out in September on the next trip.
Yes, we will. That's right.
Well, wonderful. Thanks for telling us about this.
Well, thank you, Tom. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about Where Are Your Men?
Yeah, that's the title of the book, Where Are Your Men? Rafting Western Rivers with the Ladies. It's out and available now. You can buy it at Amazon and other places. There's a website as well, whereareyourmen.com. Zan Merrill is a co-editor of the book, and she's joined us. Thanks again. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Tom.
And thanks, everyone, for listening to Access Utah.
Psychedelics may be the way out of depression. I'm Dr. Lynn Pascarella, president of the American Association of Colleges and Universities. And today on the Academic Minute, Rahel Aguilar-Vazquez, assistant professor in the Department of Neuroscience at Carleton University, explores why.
Depression is one of the most significant challenges of our time, affecting over 280 million people worldwide. The most widely prescribed type of antidepressant medication is selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, or SSRIs, but they only have a 60% effectiveness rate, and it can take months on daily medication for patients to begin feeling better, a difficult wait for those already struggling with low mood or suicidal thoughts. The exact biological causes of depression remain unclear, but chronic stress can cause significant damage to neurons. Psychedelics, a category of drugs that includes lysergic acid, diethylamide or LSD, and psilocybin, can help the brain repair some of that atrophy. Psychedelics are unique in that they cause profound changes in consciousness and promote neuroplasticity, the ability of the brain's neural networks to rewire itself. We recently found that 2-bromo-LSD, a non-hallucinogenic derivative of LSD, could be a treatment option for depression and anxiety. 2-bromo-LSD was synthesized in 1940 by Swiss chemist Albert Hofmann at the same time as regular LSD. The drug initially drew less attention compared to its flashier hallucination-inducing sibling. Today, the lack of trip is a major selling point for researchers as we explore whether 2-bromo-LSD could work as an antidepressant, harnessing the power of its unique neurological profile without the inconveniences of sensory impairment. Indeed, our initial findings suggest that 2-bromo-LSD can rapidly induce neuroplasticity and reverse the effects of chronic stress in mice. Despite the promise, these results should be validated in depression patients for safety and efficacy.
That was Argel Aguilar-Vazquez of Carleton University. You can find this, other segments, and more information about the professors at academicminute.org.
Production support for the Academic Minute comes from AAC&U, Advancing Liberal Learning and Research for the Public Good.
This is Utah Public Radio, a statewide service of Utah State University and the College of Humanities and Social Sciences. KUSR Logan, KUSK Vernal, KUSL Richfield, KUST Moab, KCEU Price, KUSUFM Logan, and UPR.org.